Welcome to the Productivity Mastery Podcast, presented to you by myself, Stoyan Yankov, productivity and performance coach, keynote and TEDx speaker, and co-author of the Perform Methodology, and the book Perform, the Unsexy Truth About Startup Success. Join me on a journey to discover what some of the world's leading professionals do to be more productive, create peak performing teams, and build successful global companies. New episodes weekly. And now, enjoy today's episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Productivity Mastery, the show that's bringing some of the most inspiring, accomplished, and I would say very down-to-earth leaders from all across the globe. And today we are welcoming somebody from a country very dear to mine. She's German. She's a former lawyer. So how much more structure can you get, right? But my guest today and I, we met and we had a really great time last year in Austria, where we were both speakers at the 15 Seconds Conference. Check it out, guys. It's a great conference, one of my favorite events, and I had a chance to hang out with Judith, to obviously attend some keynotes, workshops. Unfortunately, our workshops were more or less around the same time.
Right? Yes. Yeah.
So I assume she smashed it. I don't know. Personally. but my guest today, and let me just give you a bit of a perspective. She is currently the CHRO, or Chief Human Resource Officer, of a company that's called Becker's Group. After 26 years of focusing on people, topic, and organizations, she's still fascinated by a lot of aspects on this broad field. Her motto has been unleashing potential of individuals and organizations for some time now, and she can prove this in different industry in very international environments. She's always seeking new ways to learn and grow and to support her people, and I'm really excited to talk to her today about how do we build up organizational resilience, something that she knows from all the experience she's gone through, and hopefully she can share some really practical advice. I have no doubt about that. First of all, Judith, welcome to the show, and Chief HR Officer. We were having this conversation prior to the podcast that, you know, HR, human resources, it's not like something I'm really, you know, really enjoy as a phrase.
Yeah. Okay. So first of all, thanks for the invite. Really happy to be here because it will be fun. I know that. We had a great time in Graz and we kept the contact. So I really appreciate now to meet again, talking about some real hard stuff, right? So HR, yeah, I know, and I'm not a fan as well. And I can tell you, I would never come into an organization that calls the topic HR and immediately change the name. I rather build up something that is very credible and inspiring, and then decide if at one point in time I'm going to change it. I did that in my former company. So I was first, I think, SVP HR and communications. And at one point in time, I was SVP people and communications. We actually said people, organization, and culture at that time. But I think it's very important to build up some, you know, solid ground that you can rename a function. And at the moment, I'm also, this is not my biggest topic, you know, so everybody now understands HR. Actually, what we are now in the phases that I have gone through with the organization, we have so much data now that we have a lot of new HR people or people that are actually quite inspired, I think, at the end now from with our work. And that's much more important than the names. And as a lawyer, I can tell you, if you name something, it's still not the change. The change needs to be somewhere else.
Right. So Judith, why don't you give us a bit of a context? First of all, I think it's interesting for me and possibly for the audience, how do you decide, you know, I want to become a chief HR officer? Like, was that something that you were like consciously pursuing? And maybe give us a bit of a context. How large is the organization? How many people are part of it? And what do you guys do at the Becker's Group?
Absolutely. Okay, so, well, how I identified that I want to work in people, that was actually more by chance. So I think I'm a quite ambitious person. After school, so I'm a Bavarian. That is a really difference than to a German, but you will find out later, or maybe you found out already later. So then I said, okay, I want to make money, you know, so I don't have a lot of talent in the, you know, science space. I think I'm not precise enough. So I had some love of some topics, but was more connected with a teacher. And then I said, okay, it's either economics, like business, or law. And as my parents are very intellectual, I said, okay, law is a little bit more challenging, actually, and it's a little bit more, you know, solid than business. And I decided to study law, which was the complete wrong decisions, and I would never do it again. I would actually do a business, I don't know, an MBA kind of type, and go very international. But you always know that, you know, after it, right? So during the studies, you learn structured thinking, and that I think is helpful anytime. But it's not very creative. It's a lot of, you know, tough just learning. So I knew that I want to go into business. That was clear from the beginning. I did not want to go become a judge or something like that. And I did some internships. And then I was applying before I even knew my scores. And I actually got an offer by chance in the corporate HR department, like in the headquarters of Siemens, where I did already an internship during my studies. But it was not in the law department, and I was really frustrated because I said, I'm a very good lawyer, so why should I go in this kind of strange HR department? This is absolutely not needing my genius law capabilities. But you know, I don't know how you are spiritually thinking or philosophically thinking, but there's always a kind of interesting kind of dynamic of life that sometimes is actually the right thing. And I'm so happy that I ended up in the people topic, because I found out, not immediately, but quite fast, that actually people are much more interesting than just cases and big piles of paper. And when I talked to one of my best friends, she actually turned into a fabulous lawyer. She tells me about 700 pages contract that she's running up and negotiating. And I'm always very grateful and say, oh my God, this was really good that I got the offer of the HR department. And I really started very well in a very low hierarchy moment of this organization of Siemens, which is not a very non-hierarchical, low hierarchy organization. But I was lucky, and I had a big project already at my first job. And that was kind of building me up. And that was kind of giving me also some self-confidence that I can achieve something, I can move something, right? And that was probably then building me a little bit on this career path towards this fabulous title of CHRO. And I'm the number one in HR or people. Now, the second time in Becker's Group, I was it before in a digital company, which is a complete different planet. But I think it's also interesting because probably in your customer base, that's more digital businesses, I would guess. So I could relate to that. So I started in the multinational world with Siemens. My HR school or my people school was at Danone. I was there 11 years and got the second half of the 11 years. I had international jobs and I got the international bug. And I'm fascinated about different cultures, human beings. And I have so many insights, and maybe, yeah, you did already your TED Talk, but probably I need to, I don't know if I need to do a TED Talk, but observing human beings and really seeing what is actually human together, you know, everybody has the same kind of, everybody wants to be recognized. Everybody wants to be a part of a team, a tribe or something. Everybody wants to progress. Yeah? So that's everywhere. And then for sure, I was becoming very fascinated with emerging countries where people are very risk friendly. Yeah? So tomorrow is a better day. Yeah? So they go for it. They're resilient. They're determined. Much more than in this very, you know, calm and comfortable space of the mature countries, mostly in Europe, but also somewhere else. So for me, it's fascinating how people tick, what is motivating them. And you told this motto that I had for a long time, unleashing potential. It sounds a little bit cliche and banal, but for me, it's like I'm talking to a person, first of all, and try to understand that. And then I kind of get a visual picture in front of my eyes, what they could do in the future. And then my role is actually be a kind of catalyst to bring out this and help this person to achieve it. And sometimes understand that what they are trying to achieve is actually not driven by their own intrinsic motivation, but maybe by peer pressure or something like that, and it's the wrong path. But it's also sometimes people that are a little bit hesitant to jump, to reassure them, yeah, that they are really strong and they can do a lot. So that's different little impulses, and it's not never doing the thing, but it's giving impulses and nudging individuals towards that. And I've seen fantastic stories. And that is really, you know, what is giving me goosebumps. But then I also said organizations. So for me now, the bigger the job or the bigger the responsibility or whatever, it's not about big or small, but how you can influence an organization. What I became fascinated in my last jobs, where I could also move some mountains or some hills, to really understand, okay, where is the organization? Where do we want to go? And now what will be the impulses that bring it over there? Yeah. So, and what are the little puzzle pieces that need to fit together that at one point in time it's exploding? Yeah. And I had already in my past, I was in a lot of high growth scenarios, and I always tried to understand, okay, so what is really differentiating it, and what is now the turning point where things are exploding, both for individuals. Yeah, there's also sometimes breakthrough moments for the individual with some circumstances and some learnings, but also for organizations. I would say it's a little bit more complex for sure, and you never come in and know exactly what to do. You need to really test it and understand what's happening. And that's really fascinating. And I can tell you, yeah, you said also I should talk a little bit about Becker's Group. It was really funny because I was coming from a digital business, cash machine, really fantastic market position, owned by a private equity, successful IPO, but big transformation to really become more empowered and more agile and this kind of thing. Also a transformation story. Then after some time out to this organization, which is a 150-year-old or over 150-year-old business, like a hidden champion, we call it in Germany. I don't know if that rings something. So a SME business, it's something like 750 million turnover. It's something like 1,800 employees worldwide. It's a global player. It's in a lot of countries market leader in their little niche of specialty chemicals. So it's paint for big steel and aluminium substrates. So the customer base is a B2B business, The customer base is mostly big steel producers. Yeah? And it's global. And that was super important for me because I'm just fascinated, as I told you. And I thought I come in a completely different planet. So coming from digital into, factories. You know, we have 24 factories worldwide. It's also quite some traditional business, sometimes also quite manual, so not highly automated. It's like in a kitchen. You mix ingredients and then get the paint. But it's not an easy kitchen, yeah? So I really thought in the beginning, oh my God, I really landed on another planet. And it was clear that this organization was really successful in their niche. But I think that is also something that we want to talk about today. If you believe too much in your strengths, in your past success, that will set you up for failure. Yeah? And that is not building any resilience because it's not tested. Your resilience can only build like a muscle if it's tested, right? Yeah, so I talk a lot, so I hope you could still follow me.
Don't worry. I wanted to get this context, and I will start navigating you towards the topics I want us to cover. But I think it's very important for the audience to get a bit of a context about that. And what's interesting for me, and I would like to deep dive into the crisis management and resilience topics afterwards. But what's interesting to me is what's on your mind. I mean, you are responsible for 1,800 plus people, like from a people standpoint, right? To make sure that they have what they need, they're taken care of, and everything else. But the last 2-3 years, we all know the world has been quite an uncertain place, many changes, you know, starting from a global pandemic. There's been a war in Ukraine still happening, a lot of movement, global recession and many companies changing their strategies, the way they do things. So there's a lot of movement, there's a lot of uncertainty out there. So I wonder, what are the kind of topics that have been on your mind, your core priorities in these uncertain moving times?
Yeah. You know, Stoyan, you will be a little bit bored, but the topics have not changed so much because I actually would also always argue that the people topics, the questions are always the same. Yeah? So how do I organize my business? How do I drive change? Then what is the culture we want to kind of develop or garden? You cannot fix a culture, right? But you need to develop it. You need to influence it. You need to grow your people and also find the right ones, the classical topics, because if you recruit the wrong ones, you know what kind of impact that immediately gives to the culture, but also the performance. And you want to measure performance and have a performance culture. And as you know, also the people, yes, we are the ones that are caring for people and we listen to people. But actually, we are also measuring. And I started very early already in my Danone years, I think quite early compared to the world of HR out there, to really look at analytics, to measure our impact that we are creating. So for me, those are the topics, and they are not changing. But what is changing is really our answers. And there we need to be close. Well, to the world, what is happening out there, we need to be close to what's happening inside, not only just on the leaders. We also have the job to really understand what is going on in the different levels of the organization, what is also trickling down, what is not understood, what is questioned. And for sure, I believe in those topics that everybody is contributing. It's not just one genius leader that is solving all the questions. And nowadays, in those times that you are describing, anyways, it's a complete stupid idea. If you feel that somebody will be the one that that knows exactly what to do. Yeah, it's really a team effort nowadays. One topic I will pick out is mental health. I actually, that is one of the topics that I changed my mind on during the pandemic. Before, I had almost, and I'm a complete anti-cynical person, but I kind of made some jokes about it. I said, okay, this is for companies. They, you know, offer the yoga lessons to their people in the evening, and during the day they shout at them. They have high pressure cultures, and they are destroying actually the mental health. And then they give a little band-aid. Now you have a nice yoga lesson.
Of course, it is.
Exactly. So I was joking about this, the engagement of companies in that. And then I needed to change my mind because I really found out, we did some pilot surveys where we found out that the stress level, the anxiety level, and sometimes even some individuals moving towards a kind of depressive, you know, really state. I then understood, okay, so apparently the health system, the society cannot tackle those challenges on their own, as with a lot of other challenges the planet has, right? So then the companies need to take more responsibility nowadays. And so there, really recently, I changed my mind. On the other topics is really going, and actually, I built a people plan. I already called it people plan at that time.
Let's
to,
go.
You know, rebel a little bit against the HR title already in the beginning. I actually can tell you it still is quite, we are adapting it. We are looking at it regularly, but you need a long-term plan in the people space. You cannot change this like on a monthly basis or even on a yearly basis. You need to adapt it. You need to also understand what I could not understand, how fast I can go. Yeah, that I cannot predict, but I know where I need to go because I also need to understand where we want to go as a business. Yeah, and then I have a pragmatic people plan. So what is the organization that will empower us to do? Yeah, we had too many hierarchical levels, for example. I was coming in and saying, oh my God, this is crazy. Between the CEO and the operator, how many levels do we have that can at least minimum slow us down or even kill a lot of great ideas? So you come in, you have some insights, you know quite fast, actually, after 20 years, where you really will go deeper. But then how to do it, what to really develop, listening first to everybody and understanding, okay, what is the success factors also that we should absolutely not sacrifice? That is then the fascinating topic. So that's why actually steering the course, but for sure slowing down some topics, reprioritizing some short-term actions for sure. But not completely changing everything, and also course or having the direction on, you know, what is the culture, what are our values, but also what is our purpose. We strengthen actually the work on sustainability, which is quite normal for a chemical company. Yeah, but we see also now in crisis time, a lot of companies say, oh, yeah, maybe deprioritize it, right? And because we need to fix first the business. That's a little bit of a dangerous game, I would say. So that is what we try to avoid.
So organizational resilience. And by the way, for those of you listening, I'm just going to read for you a definition that I found. Organizational resilience is the ability of a company to adapt and respond to changes, disruptions, and unforeseen events while maintaining its core functions and objectives. So you talked about the importance of building the right kind of environment, culture, and attracting the right people on board. Is that the first step for us as leaders in terms of setting the ground for this organizational resilience?
Well, yes. So if you have, Yeah, you always have, and this is, so you need to have the people that are connected with your purpose. If they are there just for the job, for the money, I would probably be afraid that they will leave whenever you are facing some more difficult times, right? Because that will be more frustrating, more tougher to work. Maybe the bonus level is not so high than in those times or something like that. I would argue to have a passion that is connected with a purpose, that is an important trait that you should not ignore. And I think that was also probably our advantage. We had the great resignation, right, in the last 2 years, and we were not so suffering about it. And I actually, my hypothesis is that to even in crisis time focus more on purpose and more on sustainability is then creating actually an advantage for the people that are feeling passionate about, yeah? Because it's also the test, are you really serious, yeah? And people are not stupid. We should never say they are or think that they are stupid. They are very clear in how they observe it, and they will find out, yeah? Is it just a lip service, a nice marketing story, especially in crisis times, yeah? So where are you making your choices then? That will be observed. And you know it also that people are getting much more, yeah, well, they have higher expectations. They don't want to waste their time with something that they think is not the right, I don't know, even influence on the planet, right? they are asking those questions first to themselves, but also to their leaders, for sure.
You know, when you were talking about bringing the right people on board and having people who have this kind of mindset, it reminds me, and I don't know if you're a football fan, but I myself and the listeners who are into football, European football, not soccer, right? Like it's soccer actually, right? For the Americans, it's soccer, right? But it's football. I'm a big fan of Manchester United, right? Just to give you a context, this season, we got a new manager, Eric Ten Hag, and he's been transforming the team and literally the teams has been transformed. Now they're winning, they're having this mentality, and I'm just observing because I'm always interested in teams and culture. Yeah. Many of the players he had, you can't get rid of all the players, right? He got a few new players, but the new players that he got, and I can mention some of the names even, Casemiro, Varane, Martinez, Malasia, these kind of players, some of them, I wouldn't argue they're the best players, some of them are winners, right? So he got a few of these experienced winners, like Casemiro and Varane are people who won Champions League more than 5 times. They have the winning mindset. They have this never quitting kind of mindset. Yep. And they have a lot of experience, right? And then he brought these younger, super hungry guys. This winter transfer window, you know, one of the best players ever to play the game, Cristiano Ronaldo, after these scandals and stuff, he left.
Yeah.
You know, and he brought instead of him this Dutch player who's not really a good scorer. Like he's playing as a striker, but he's not a good scorer, but he's running, he's after the ball, he's hungry, and I think the impact he's having, this manager on the team, with bringing these people that are winning, that are no quitters, that are resilient, that you can see some of the last several games. Yesterday they were losing. We are recording this on 2nd of March. Yesterday they were losing by the, you know, late in the game, minute 80 or something, and they came back, they scored 3 goals in the last minutes. This is resilience.
This is cool.
Never quitting. The thing is, most of the players, they're the same, you know, like there's a few new, but the culture that this guy brought, discipline, the culture, the hunger, completely transformed how the organization performs. So yeah, I just wanted to elaborate on that.
And there's a lot of parallels to the business world. You know, I was I had a very cool job in Danone, and I was an international talent director. right after a big acquisition that Danone did, and that was a business function because we really were changing the business model or the organizational model also from a centralized organization to a decentralized organization. Then we needed to find out, okay, who is really up for that? Because if you are an executor, and now you need to build your own strategy and really implement it and, you know, create a vision, that not everybody will be able to do that. So it was really a moment that it was a very clear business function, and I was all about finding the elite people. And to be honest, when I look back, and I think I did a great job because I really could measure the results. They were coming from, I don't know, 1.4 billion within 4 to 5 years into 4 billion. So it was a success story. Yeah, and the impact of the people was really direct. Yeah? So you could really measure that. So it was a successful story. But I would argue at that time it was the right thing. But what did I do actually? To be honest, I was looking at the top leadership team and I kind of looked for clones of this team, if I'm really honest. So there was a certain type at that time that was kind of the winning type, for this organization in this phase, in this maturity level of the organization with this challenge, and it worked very well. And that was really finding the superstars, super smart, super ambitious, fast on their feet, really fast implementation and all this stuff. And to be honest, now I think it would be the wrong model. And it's exactly what you're describing in soccer or football. That's
Manchester United.
We are in Europe. It's more about the strong team nowadays. Because of what? Because we are moving in a complex world. We are not having the weapons, the tools, the best practices, like in a world where complicated problems exist. We know exactly what to do. We just do it more faster, more colorful. We repeat ourselves. That was in the past. Now we are moving into this world of complexity where nobody has the best answer, that no one person is the complete genius that can predict what exactly will happen. And that's why you need teams and actually diverse teams. Now there's the business case really for diverse teams because it's very hard to work in a diverse team. There's not, I'm always a little bit unnerved about the romanticism. Oh, we need to push for diversity. It's very, nerve-wracking in the beginning because it's not easy to communicate with significantly different people. You need to listen much more. You need to spend much more time. For sure, the chance of the outcome is much higher. And actually now I think we have the business case because now it's so complex. It's so interdependent with all the crisis situations that we cannot predict. We are facing with new challenges, also in a high frequency. And that's where the team is coming in. And that's why all our tools are actually obsolete also to find the elite superstar. Also, in the people space, I would say in the HR space, formally, all our talent process. Also the stupid, again, the word talent. So there's talents and non-talents or what. This is completely crazy. So I actually had a book that helped me that I said, okay, I need to throw away all my tools now because actually I need to, one trait is that that people can identify with team player and they fight for the team and not for themselves. But a lot of things that we did in the past was actually even demonstrating to the superstar, okay, you need to shine all the time. Yeah? We actually incentivized them to step out of the team and really say, okay, I'm the winner, I'm leading now the course. I put my stamp on the organization. And this will not work. It worked in the past. And, you know, I'm not really criticizing also myself for doing what I did, but it will not work. Yeah, already now and in the future, even less so. Yeah? So now, and this is exactly what you were describing with Manchester. Is it your favorite team?
It's been for many years.
Okay. No, so
we were suffering for 10 years. The team was really, really bad. We're finally coming back, right? So
and they had a beautiful past as well.
They're one of the biggest teams, but the last 10 years it's been you know, very, very difficult times. The team was struggling, but very interesting you're talking about this. I actually made a LinkedIn post today with a video from one of the previous podcast episodes with Dr. Ivan Joseph, who's a former soccer/football coach, who's okay. A professional speaker and an author now. And he was talking about we need to be really good in distinguishing between the hyperachievers and the toxic achievers.
Exactly.
You know, like the hyperachievers who are team players and they're playing for the team and they want us to win us. Again, you want these competitive high achievers, but this is a question to you. I mean, you guys have a process and stuff, but how do you recognize during a few rounds of interviews, right? Like, who's the toxic achievers versus who is the team player competitive achiever?
Well, I would say after 20 years, there is a certain intuition, because intuition is not just your instinct, right? It's a learned behavior where you are doing a lot of interviews. I don't know how many interviews I've done. And then you always measure, okay, what is the career path after that? To be honest, I was trusting myself a lot, and I still trust myself because the failure rate is not so high. Yeah, so I could even give you, I don't know, maybe after 20 years, I would say maybe less than 10 failure stories. They are still painful, but also interesting learnings. And it's also it's actually then helping you to analyze what happened in the recruitment process. Wrong, but actually I now, since actually Beckers, because we are represented in so many different countries and also in cultures where India and China, I must say, I'm rather having also some external assessment help on senior positions now. I introduced that, and that was a big hurdle for me because I really trust my instinct and my intuition and, you know, also my experience. But actually, with cultures where I was not born there, they are significantly different than my culture that I feel comfortable also in. Then I have I like some additional help, yeah, and it's still challenging for sure. And then after the recruitment, we still have some people review process. The criteria we are rating people against is performance, still classical. But for me, what I introduced since also the digital company is fit to the values, behavior according to the values. And that is also always, and I'm sure you know it. So if somebody is a high performer, but really shitty on behavior, what do we do? Do we keep this person? Or do we actually say it's the wrong thing for us? We need to let go or have a really first for fair process, also a serious debate about it. And also mirror the bad behavior, but those are the moments of truth. Also, how much you're
living committed, the values.
How much you're
committed to the values.
Exactly.
Because short term it might bring additional revenue or results, and of course it's not black and white. Like there's not the 100% 100 toxic person, right? Like they might have some certain behaviors that are negative, but also they might have other behaviors that are positive, right? And is this person coachable, right? Because you know, some certain behaviors, if the person is having this growth mindset, could you coach them into that? But when you have a process, then you can take enough time to try and coach people into the behavior that fits the culture. And if they don't change positively, right? But how much do you live your values?
Exactly. So that's really a moment of truth, kind of. And it's also how self-reflected are they? And I think it's a fascinating topic. What is the level of, how can you, I'm all about growth mindset, and what are the changes that you can really nudge again? Because you cannot, the person themselves, they need to do it. And what are the best methods? And I'm still quite intrigued about this this theory about immunity to change, that it's normally those deeper beliefs, right, that are really restricting the behavioral change. And you need to go a bit deeper normally, but also the person needs to be willing to it. Sometimes it's too painful for them and they decide against, right? But they are steering it at the end, for sure. But you know, what I also was really reflecting, we just did, we are conducting a leadership journey within Beckers, because I'm against this, you know, there's one training and then you are coming out as a perfect leader and then we are done. Now we actually do modules that are really constant learning offers. And it's an offer to everybody, but it's very well received. And we do short impulses. And we just finalized today our fifth module on resilience, actually. And I was, it was so interesting because when I reflect back, we talked about, you know, Manchester United with all the superstars and, you know, also my multinational company with all the superstars focused in shining light. The traits that were really respected for leaders in the past, they are completely changing. And that is disrupting a lot of self-confidence probably of some people. Because if you are grown up in a phase where you need to be strong, you need to shine, you need to come into a room and everybody is already feeling your presence, and your whatever charisma, and you need to engage and inspire the crowd and you need to have a great speech and everything. And you need to be tough and you need to, you know, make tough decisions and everything. And what we discussed, what is helping in times of crisis, that was so interesting to listen to the colleagues. They were bringing up some traits like kindness, empathy, collaboration, listening skills. And, you know, I'm sitting and you know, my romantic people heart is beating faster for sure when I hear that. Yeah, for sure. But if I beam me back again in the past, if one of those superstars, you know, in the multinational, you know, big organization, they would have said to the leadership team, you know, I'm a kind person, I'm a good listener, I'm empathetic, and I'm a good team player, collaborator. Okay, they would not have been promoted, right? So what I really I find super interesting in this shift into much higher resilience needed, much more complex problems to solve, those traits that were probably pretty uncool or soft or female traits or something like that, that were not so convincing, and were not really representing, I don't know, the power, they are getting now in a different light and they are valued much more. And I find it fascinating. But I'm sure also that people that were identifying themselves with, you know, I am the one that has the answer, I can tell you what to do. I'm much more clever, or I don't know, I have higher experience than you or something. And I know exactly what to do. And I'm very quick. And, you know, I shoot it from the hips and stuff. They could go into a kind of identity crisis even in those times of yes, some situations where it's actually nobody has the answer, right? We all need to navigate. We need to test and learn. We need to see what's coming and what is the interdependency. What if I change here something? What is happening there? Yeah. Well, we were confronted with a raw material crisis that started 2 years ago with some, you know, I don't know, snow in Texas, force majeure of, I don't know, one big supplier in Europe, and then logistical problems in China, and then the perfect storm. And then you know, everything is blowing up. The prices are whatever, going high because and capacity was adjusted during COVID time. So some events then create this perfect storm that nobody can really predict. And also during the time, the discussions, how long will that last? That was, for me, as an outsider, a super interesting topic. Yeah, because I said then, at one point in time, you also ask the experts, you know, the consultants and everything. And they said, it's in 6 months, it's over. And I, at one point in time, listening for some time, you know, I said, okay, so is it 6 months because you are sure that it's 6 months and you have some facts that in 6 months there's really some, you know, capacity moving up or whatever? Or is it 6 months because the human being is really having a time horizon for 6 months, and beyond that, it's very hard to grasp? Yeah, so I'm the people person. I can ask those questions, right?
It's very interesting. It's very interesting that you're, you know, mentioning, often employees will emphasize on this kind of so-called softer traits like kindness, empathy. I had the pleasure to welcome on the podcast a couple of times the founding president of Starbucks International, Howard Bihar, and we talk about leadership in types of crisis, and he's been through many crises with Starbucks himself. And he emphasized on some of the same things that one of the challenges for leaders is they become different in times of crisis. Like, you know, how do you remain calm and not change your demeanor, like when things are going rough? Because it's very easy to start shouting at people and change your energy and mindset when things are under fire, for example, if there's an emergency or if there is a crisis and you are having limited resources and constraints. So kind of the ability to remain calm and treat people with kindness. And I would say on top of that, I still believe in the combination, you know, these qualities and traits combined with, yes, a leader needs to be decisive. Yes, a leader needs to be courageous and lead everybody, but she or he need to also be calm, remain calm, to have this mental toughness, this kindness, the way you communicate. I think Howard probably mentioned several times, I don't know how many times, that the importance of being direct, being honest and being direct in times of crisis. And it's very difficult sometimes when you have many bad news to share. Yeah. But to have structures where you can communicate with everyone what's happening, what's the situation, give them constant updates. Yeah, you know, having their back, not hiding information. Of course, talking about solutions, vision, where we could be, but not making assumptions and share them as facts, right?
Yeah.
So some of those kind of, which, you know, what I'm curious to hear from you. I want to hear, and I think that's going to be helpful both for people who are employing people, right? Employers or people departments, entrepreneurs, but I think it will also be be important and valuable for people who are applying for jobs and who are, you know, probably graduating now or they're applying for a next job. It's what do you value? And again, 2023, it might be completely different than what it was 5-10 years ago. What do you value in terms of personal traits, right? Like what are those kind of not related to your position type of traits and of character that you look for when you're, you know, a checklist, right? When you are about to get somebody on board, what are those personal traits? You know, like, I think it would be really helpful to hear.
Yeah. And I need to say, well, I'm humble enough to really say, okay, I'm inspired. I'm an extrovert, you know, I'm inspired also by big ideas and everything. So I have my personal preferences. And for sure, in my job, it's not about the personal preferences. Even staffing for my own team, because if I have just mini-me's in my team, that's also not the right thing. But let me give you some general answers, because I really try to understand, okay, what is the culture of the company? And I have worked in different environments, and for sure, it was different cultures and also different traits that you need to then look for, right? Because the worst thing is always to attract somebody where you know they will not feel well, yeah? Because either they leave, that's the best case scenario, but it's stupid and it's also a waste, yeah? Or they even destroy your culture or confusing people around them completely. So because they are not representing the culture that you kind of described, which is the right one for the company. So I would really argue that I try to understand first, okay, what's the, you know, what is the culture of the company? What are the values? And then on the job, what do we need to do? Do we need somebody that pioneers a topic? So for us as a traditional company, for example, we had some functions like even HR that needed to be built up from a very basic level, like a really professional, you know, big step. And then you need a different person. You need actually a quite experienced person, that knows exactly already what to do. You could not do it with an inexperience, but you also need somebody that with high listening skills, because somebody comes in and say, okay, you know, you have been here for 150 years. I ignore everything what you have been doing and I teach you now how to do it. That will not work, right? So that is really specific for the company. But I would say that, for example, for junior positions, I really love, and, you know, I hate this Gen Z debate, what is the characteristics and everything, because it's really stupid, because every next generation is disrupting the current one. So it's really ridiculous to put them into a box and then say, okay, what is their characteristics, ignoring that the other generations also have higher expectations and are not so patient anymore and blah, blah, blah. But I would say some characteristics of this generation is some protectedness, right? So this helicopter parents that they have, I think they result into, low self-confidence if you actually, especially in times where you need resilience, a fighting spirit. So what I love, for example, with young people, and okay, in my position, unfortunately, I don't have a lot of young people that I'm recruiting myself anymore. But I had one in my team, for example, when I started, and I had really this kind of mature country profile, very protected. But actually, I gave them a very tough business case. And then there was one with not this perfect, you know, family and a perfect upbringing and not born here, but somewhere else. But a fighter spirit. So I love for the young guys, somebody with a fighter spirit. And that's normally correlates with some not so easy upbringing, some difficulties, that I'm inspired with. So there, you know, you can really win me over if you have this, you know, I'm going to go through it and I'm really, you know, I want to make it work. That is inspiring for me. And I think that is also needed for the next generation. The poor guys that have been overprotected, they don't really, they give up very fast. And that's really a sad thing. So that I don't find so inspiring. So probably for junior, more junior people, I really look for that and curiosity, really eagerness to learn and really, you know, a kind of open growth mindset.
I think for, you know, we don't want to generalize in something, but I think the curiosity piece, this younger generation is really good at that. That's my
absolutely
observation.
Yes. No,
that's my observation, and I think what I feel. Probably not just in the younger generation, but for me, what's one of the important, just to add on the list, I love the fighter spirit. Like this is so good. This is so good. I would add on top of that kindness, like this being a positive and kind and good person, right? That's something I would add. And if I put them in one box, taking ownership and being proactive, yeah. That's
but they are. And they're super networked. Yeah. So social skills, and also, you know, this kind of, I never see that. That I think is quite common because of the world they are growing up with. Yeah. So very connected, hyperactive world and really understanding very fast. And so that I don't doubt so much.
Well, I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
And I'm not talking about generation or something, but I'm talking about the basic business ethics kind of mindset, which is about, you know, you don't have tasks to do or something. You're the one that needs to go to your manager and to say, hey, I'm not busy now. What do I have to do? Or you are late with something because you have other things to do. You're the one that needs to take ownership to communicate that with. It's not like, where's the report? I didn't have time. Is it my responsibility to know when your report is being, you know, like that's what I mean. It's like this kind of a little bit of a different way of seeing what taking ownership means. I'm not saying it's the wrong way, but I think it's a little bit different. That's what I observe. And it's not just this generation. I'm just talking in general. For me, taking ownership and accountability is proactiveness, right?
But that is something that you can learn. I don't know. I would argue, you know, with my weekly Kanban, you know, check with a team and everybody needs to know where they are. And you learn that very quickly.
I agree. You can learn it.
And I think,
I agree. You can learn it if you're in the right environment, if you have the structures. Yeah. And if you are a kind of person that, you know, wants to be a great professional, it's not difficult to learn.
No. So that is, and then, you know, with some more more senior leaders, I'm actually looking very much for self-reflection. I would say, and, you know, the other traits are really dependent on the job. Do we need strategic skills? Do we need some experience of a special trade? Or, you know, that is very specific. But I would always say, I'm really underwhelmed if somebody says, you don't have the idea that they constantly reflect and learn. Yeah, I want to hear that from somebody that has already some experience, because somebody that says everything was golden and nothing really was not so golden, and I did not have to learn because everything that I was touching was perfect. There I get very suspicious, and I need also to feel passion. I need to really feel energy. That is probably also my personal trait, but I really have the theory, if you want to be a leader, you need to also touch people's hearts, right? And if you don't have the passion, then it's difficult, right?
I love
it. You will be respected, passion. But yes...
the passion, so they're... the values, the like the basic kind of things you mentioned at the beginning, this metaphor of the garden. Like it's actually not rocket science. Like it's so accessible, the knowledge, the information these days of what it takes to be a leader, but yet it's a complex thing to do, and you got to do it on a daily basis. Like it should be a commitment, right? If you and maybe that would be a great way to wrap up this amazing episode. Thank you so much, Judith. You know, the hour has been just flew
yeah, no,
away.
I had much crazy. More that I wanted to discuss with you.
Well, we're gonna have it back. We're gonna have it back for sure for another episode. But I want you if we can kind of maybe wrap it up with this. There's many organizations out there nowadays and leaders, individuals that are affected by the global events that are struggling in one way or another. So what would be your message to leaders out there who are going through difficult, really struggling through difficult times?
Yeah, I would actually say be grateful for the crisis. I was in my career in a lot of environments that were very successful for a very long time with really high growth scenarios, golden times. So maximize the bony and the crazy rates of growth. And if it takes too long, then because the crisis will come, right? If it takes too long, there is a phase where you believe in your own genius and hybris, and I think it's a human trait, then that you think we are invincible. And at that moment, you become worse. You are not alert. You are not really on your feet anymore. You believe, okay, we've done there, we've been there, we will always be the number one. Nobody can touch us because we are just the best. And you know, you do your speeches. And at that moment, you decline. And I've seen it. Then you have a lot of, so you see flattening. But then, yeah, you have a lot of explanation why you're flattening. And then you go to a decline. And if it's not a steep decline, where then the sense of urgency is coming in again, it's even worse. Because then you have also, again, a lot of explanations and the time is ticking and you are not reinventing yourself. And you are so proud of your past that it takes you a long time to react. Yeah? And I've seen that already in the reality. And I said at that time, okay, this should not happen to the space that I'm in the future anymore, because I've seen it once. So I will warn everybody. And it's difficult. So actually, I would say be grateful for the crisis, because it sharpens your mind. It keeps you on the feet. We are moving into this unpredictable world. Let's not kid ourselves. And if we don't love it, it will be very difficult for us. So actually, we need to find a way to love it and to really see the chances. And, you know, there's this statements of breakdowns create breakthroughs. And I really believe in that. So we need those difficult times to get better, yeah, and to stay alert and to learn much more. And, yeah, that's a cliche also, that the learnings come when things are not going so well, yeah, or they're even a failure or something. And then how to digest that, learn from it, reflect on it. That's actually what is securing your success in the future. Yeah? So be grateful for all the things that are thrown on in our faces constantly nowadays.
I love it. Be grateful for the crisis. Stay alert. Be nimble and adaptable, like fast adaptable. Create structures that allow this. And you know, not every crisis is going to be a crisis you can survive and your business can survive. Like, let's be honest, there'll be businesses in any crisis that will fail to exist. But if you do your very best and actually make it through, there will be a lot of benefits on the other side. There will be a lot of opportunities and you know, we can go into another discussion on how much your team will grow through difficult times and come together, which is a beautiful thing as well. But of course, we need to invite Judith for another episode to go deeper into another discussion. Judith, finally, where could people get in touch with you, find you? Where are you?
I think the easiest is on LinkedIn. I do some Insta, but I have a private account. No, LinkedIn is, I think, the best social media.
Ladies and gentlemen, you heard Judith. She's on LinkedIn. You can find her, how to spell her name, in the description of the episode.
Very easy, and exactly.
It is very easy. And if you're excited about making a career in Becker's Group, you can, of course, get in touch. Now you know what they're looking for, obviously, always looking for the top talent and the kind of feature they're looking for. So thank you once again for being with us. Thank you, Judith, for sharing so much practical ideas and strategies. Very much appreciate. I'm grateful for you. I know you're grateful for the crisis. I'm grateful for you being here with me. And I will see you once again.
Perfect. Audience, thank you so much. Was
everybody,
really fun.
Next episode of Productivity Mastery. Keep following. Every week we're going to bring you more exciting guests sharing practical advice. So stay with us. Thank you guys for listening. Make sure to subscribe to my monthly newsletter by visiting stoyanyankov.com and also learn about the Perform methodology and the Perform book, as well as our various personal and team coaching offers. Stay tuned and keep performing.